Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of Trib Tower. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to talk about comedy teams, the best comedy teams. The reason why is because over the weekend, Sven Gulli, our good friend Rich Coase, showed Abbott and Costello Go to Mars. And I forgot what just a weird movie it is, but that got me thinking about great comedy teams, and we're going to talk about that. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Monday morning movie reviews. We're going to talk about all the new movies. We'll talk about the box office, but we also have a big announcement to make. Chicago Critics Film Festival is happening, and we are going to tell you all about it. It's the sixth annual Chicago Film Critics Association. It's the Chicago Critics Film Festival, and it's at the Music Box, and we'll get all the information from that, and the schedule has been announced, so it's very exciting. And Eric Childress, Colin Suter, they join me each week to review the new movies for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, the Chicago Critics Film Festival has made its big announcement. Tell us about it.
It has. Well, this year, in 3 weeks, May 4th to the 10th, again at the Music Box Theater. Full week of movies, a lot of things that we've talked about on this very show at some of the film festivals that I've gone through. And we have quite a lineup once again. We have special guests every night. Including on Monday, May 7th, we're going to be joined by none other than Paul Schrader for his new film, First Reformed. He's going to be at the screening at the Music Box for a Q&A. On opening night, we're going to be showing the movie Fast Color from South by Southwest. And in attendance, we're going to have Jordan Horowitz, the writer and producer of the film. Some people may know him from the infamous La La Land Oscar.
Yeah.
Infamy.
Yeah.
He is the guy that basically gave the award to Moonlight that
right.
night. He will be there as well as the star of the film, Gugu Mbatha-Raw. So that will be our opening night film. And fast forward to our closing night film. It was a film we already announced called Eighth Grade that I talked about from Sundance. And comedian, writer, director of the film, Bo Burnham, will be in attendance for that night.
Oh, wow. That's cool, man. So what are some of the other highlights that you got that you're thinking, Eric, some of the other movies that you guys are going to show?
Well, we got a movie that I haven't seen yet, but everyone else on the staff that has seen it has been raving about it since it premiered at Toronto last year. It's a movie called Bodied.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Kahn is a really terrific music video director. He's done stuff for Eminem and Taylor Swift. And this is this big sort of rap battle satire film about our culture that apparently is, I mean, everyone who sees this movie just comes out just raving about it.
Well, the trailer's great.
I haven't even watched the trailer because I kind of want to just go in fresh
right
at this point. And so I'm gonna be in attendance in the audience that night watching this film. And Joseph Kahn will be there that Saturday night for a Q&A. And if you get up, come Sunday afternoon at the Music Box, we're going to be showing a 35mm presentation, 25th anniversary of Jurassic Park.
Mm.
So it's a little something that we're going to have there for families to get things started off. And that'll kick things into the first of Colin Shorts programs as well.
All right. Colin, tell us about the shorts.
Yeah, so this year we have an amazing lineup, the first of which will be a movie called Runner, which is a film shot in Chicago, and it's kind of storyline where the less I say about it, the better, but it's a woman who goes jogging one day and witnesses something that she can't run away from, figuratively. And the movie stars and is directed and written by a woman named Claire Cooney, who is going to be a guest that day at our festival, which is, this will be Sunday, May 6th, 2:30 p.m. after Jurassic Park. So that kicks off the first shorts program. And everything after that is very comedic. I have a movie called My Dead Dad's Porno Tapes, which is a documentary about a guy trying to, understand his father through all the various items that he left behind, and that one's narrated by David Wayne. I have a movie called Alan Anders, which is directed by a woman named Laura Moss, who won our audience award last year for her short film Friday. And this is a completely different kind of film about a stand-up comedian who is kind of stuck doing the same routine every night. It's really fascinating. And I also have both World of Tomorrow movies. We're going to show them both back to back. Don Hertzfeldt's insanely ingenious animated odyssey through time and space, told through the point of view of a little girl who's only like 4 years old, and you know, it's kind of adorable. So I'm really excited to see those two films playing back to back and on the big screens, because that's where they should really be seen. So,
all right, God, I can't believe Jurassic Park is 25 years old.
I know. Yeah,
man.
Yeah,
that just makes me feel really old. You guys are also going to be screening the latest with Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, on Chelsea Beach, it's called. And what day are we screening that? Tuesday night or
Tuesday 9:45 p.m.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. She had a couple of movies coming out soon, but that's the one we like the most.
Yeah, she's the best.
It certainly is.
She's the best. So Schrader's coming in. That's really cool, man.
Yeah. No, Schrader's coming in. It should be. I mean, he really is a legend, obviously. Yeah. And the people who have seen First Reform say it's his best work in years. And so that should be a really fascinating conversation. And I hope, you know, people come out to see that movie and to you know, just sit in a room with a legend like that.
Yeah.
You know, just one of the many things we try to do with this festival. Anytime we get a chance to have like a William Friedkin, or even last year Richard Kelly, even just, you know, a chance to honor someone that we really you know, believe should be.
Yeah.
And there's so many highlights. I mean, you know, we got several weeks leading up to this festival, and you know, we could probably highlight a couple films every week. But I will say, you know, the individual tickets are on sale now. Just go to either ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com or the Music Box Theater website. I recommend, if you really want to see our closing night film, Eighth Grade, you may want to get in on that very soon.
Okay. And Paul Schrader, you know, is so many incredible credits to his name, not just as a director, but also as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite Paul Schrader movie that he directed is the first one he directed, and that's Blue Collar. It's still my favorite Paul Schrader movie. It is such a good mm-hmm. movie, and Pryor never better than in that movie. That's the only actual movie outside of his comedy concerts that mm-hmm. really captured what Richard Pryor was capable of doing. You know what I mean? Like all the other movies, some of them were funny, some of them weren't, but they never really nailed that fire that that Pryor had, except for Blue Collar. It's a great performance and a great movie. So Paul Schrader will be there on Monday, May 7th, 7:15. He'll be there. I also want to mention, I find this interesting, you guys are going to be running a documentary about Hal Ashby?
Yes.
Wow, tell me about that.
Yes, we are. It's exactly what you just described. It is a documentary about Hal Ashby that premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. A really terrific one too. I mean, you know, the fact that we're actually playing that right after Paul Schrader being there.
Right.
You have these icons of the, you know, the particularly of the 1970s.
Right.
And you know, we really wouldn't have it any other way. When I saw we got Hal, you know, one of the last few films we were able to get for the festival, it just seemed natural. It was like, no, we got to put it right by Schrader there and do it that way.
Yeah.
So,
well,
we're really excited about playing that.
That's going to be a good evening right there.
Yeah.
And so it starts May 4th and it goes all the way through May 10th. It's at the Music Box Theater. Now, can people get like full passes and all that stuff?
Yeah, full passes have been on sale for a little over a month now. Again, the same price as always, $150, gets you everything that we do at the fest. Gets you the shorts, gets you our, you know, every film on our list, and also the Chicago Film Society and the silent film series that the Music Box does there once a month on Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m. That's Saturday, May 5th. If you buy a pass for our festival, you get into that for free as well. And they're showing the Ozu film Women of Tokyo.
Mm. Okay. All right. So, and tickets are available at Chicago. You can go to the Music Box website and also the Chicago Critics Association website.
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. For the full lineup, you can check it out. Everything is there. Special guests, all kinds of screenings. The shorts program, you're doing two again this time, right, Colin?
Yeah, one on Sunday at 2:30 after Jurassic Park, and another one on Monday at 5:15 p.m. before the Paul Schrader movie.
All right, there you go. All right, all that information, full schedule, everything, special guests, it's all at ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com and also at the Music Box Theater website. Starts May 4th through the 10th, the 6th annual Chicago Critics Film Festival. Congratulations, you guys. This is pretty great.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, guys, hang on. Oh, now we got new movies to review. Hold on a second. Eric Childress is here. Colin Suter is here. Check out Chicago Chicago Critics Film Festival.com for your tickets. Passes are available. This is a great event. 6th annual, incredible movies, premieres, and guests. All that and more. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll take a quick break for the news, and then after the news, we'll come back, and it's time for movie reviews right here on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. And we are going to talk about great comedy teams. That's coming up. We'll look at the box office with Eric, and Eric and Colin are with me right now to review the week's new movies. And we'll start that right here. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
Colin, why don't you start us off with Sergeant Stubby, an American hero?
All right. Well, this is an animated film about a little homeless dog who endears himself to a group of soldiers about to go to France and help fight during World War One. And, of course, you don't really see this dog as anything other than a pleasant distraction. But the dog sneaks aboard a ship that is taking these men overseas, and, well, they have no choice but to really adopt him and take care of him and take him with them. And so the dog becomes this kind of mascot who is in there in the trenches with them and even performing acts of heroic rescue as these men go to war, and they befriend some Frenchmen along the way who also take a shine to the dog. And the movie is narrated by the daughter of the main character, Robert Conroy, who's voiced by Logan Lerman. And this is actually a true story of the most decorated dog in American history, which I didn't know going in. I didn't realize that this was going to be based on a true story. So when I saw the trailer for this thing back in December, I think it was seeing a kid's movie, and there was a ton of these trailers, and it just looked like the most poorly animated, innocuous thing you can imagine. And so I did not go into this with great expectations at all. And I was kind of just put all my prejudices aside about, you know, the quality of the animation. It's not great. It's clearly this is not Pixar level by any stretch. And I kind of got into it just because I could tell that it was made with heart. I could tell that it was not made with, you know, the most cynical of intentions. The dog is undeniably cute and not overdone as a character. It's, this is a very believable, albeit very, very intelligent dog. Not to say that dogs aren't intelligent, but, you know, this is an animated movie, so there's a little, you know, bit of liberties taken for what dogs can do. But you can tell it was made with real dogs in mind. And it was made as a really interesting history lesson for kids. And so if you kind of just put aside the fact that, okay, the animation is not up to our greatest standards, the voice work and the dialogue is very simple and very, you know, geared towards kids, not terribly sophisticated. You can put all that aside, and I realize those are kind of big hurdles. But this is a movie that I think if you're going to take your kids to see something, like, why not? This is a really good dog movie. It's a good war movie. and kids will really get something out of it while also being, being adored but watching this dog, and they'll probably want a dog if they don't already have one after they see this film. It has that kind of effect on it. So I'm recommending this film that, it was made with heart, and you can tell, and by the end I felt like I had learned something about our history that I didn't know before. So I'm recommending this film.
Oh, okay. All right. Sergeant Stubby, an American hero. It's out right now. It's playing everywhere. And there you go. But it's a interesting couple of weeks for dogs and animated movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think I kind of like this one a little bit more than Isle of Dogs, which is strange to say. Because, you take the animation style of Isle of Dogs and you combine it with this story, you have a great movie, I think. So.
Okay. All right, Sergeant Stubby, an American hero. All right, Eric, tell us about Beirut.
Well, he's just about the best dang baseball player ever lived.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. There you go.
I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
I've been holding on to that for 4 months.
I bet you were, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
but on a serious note.
Yeah.
This is a film. This film begins. It's set in the early 70s, I think like 1972. John Hamm plays a U.S. diplomat who's in Beirut, and he's hosting a party for various people, and doing his diplomat thing and mingling and whatnot. And he's there with his wife and a 13-year-old boy that they've taken in as their ward. And he's visited by a CIA friend of his, played by Mark Pellegrino, and comes and tells him that the boy who is there is actually the younger brother of a terrorist. Who they have been after, maybe compromised in some way. Needless to say that this evening really kind of runs amok, and not only does he lose the boy, but his wife is shot and killed. Flash forward to the early 80s, and he's now back in this, Ham's character is back in the States, in Boston, doing like little labor disputes, and he's called back by the CIA and to go back to Beirut to negotiate the release of the CIA friend who may have been the cause of that very evening. So reluctantly, he's a bit of an alcoholic now. He goes back to Beirut and is teamed up with another agent, played by Rosamund Pike. She tries to get him out of his funk to go back to doing what he does best and negotiating this arrangement. So I don't want to tell you too much about where the story goes from there. But basically, on the surface, you have what could best be described in the simplest terms as sort of a kind of a Bridge of Spies light, and that in no way is a criticism of the film. It feels very much like the Spielberg film. It's negotiations on bad guys and bad places and reluctance on the American government on exactly the best way to negotiate this thing. And one of the things that makes this, the movie was directed by Brad Anderson. The director that we've liked very much in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Times.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes he's done some lesser works, but when he's on. And this one feels like this is just a good solid thriller. And one of the reasons that it works as well as it does, you have a really good cast in the film. Some of the other CIA agents are played by Dean Norris and Shea Whigham. So you have a good cast here. But really, John Hamm is given a performance in this movie is the kind of thing that you expected him to break into the big screen with after Mad Men was over. This is that kind of movie star like performance where he just holds your attention on screen. There's an underlying anger to this character, an unpredictability at times, but you always feel like he's the greatest force when he enters a room, even when he is at at his lowest points. So this is a good solid thriller. It doesn't exactly break new ground. It doesn't exactly make any sort of far-reaching political statements about our involvement in Beirut at the time. There's sprinkled in here and there, but that's the surface of it is the negotiation process and the kind of the intrigue that goes on along with that. And, you know, as Colin said, you recommend, you know, a nice film for families. This is a good film for adults. So I recommend Beirut.
Yeah, so do I. I think John Hamm's terrific in it, man.
Yeah.
He's really, really good in it. And it's a solid movie. It's, you know, Tony Gilroy wrote it, and it's a smart script. And, you know, you mentioned some of the other cast being in the film as well. A very solid, strong group of actors and actresses in here. And I just, you know, it's suspenseful. It's interesting. And but I think it's really the anchor of this movie is John Hamm and his performance. And I agree with you. This is something that you would see. Like you would expect him to break out after, you know, after Mad Men, but he went comedy route.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm not, fine with too.
No, absolutely, because yeah. he's one of the funniest people on the planet. And again, I remember, you know, because I watched Mad Men, and then when John Hamm, I was like, you know, when John Hamm hosted SNL the mm-hmm. first time, I was like, what? Because I couldn't believe how funny he was, and so all these years now he's been doing all these comedies, this is a really good solid dramatic performance for him, and I think he's the anchor of the movie, and he's terrific in it, and again, it's not the greatest thriller in the world, you know, we've seen these kind of movies before, but you know it's just a really terrific performance by John Hamm, and I'm a fan of Brad Anderson's most of his work,
most of it, yeah.
You know, and he's been doing a lot of TV lately too, but good TV. You know, he's been doing mm-hmm. you know, like he directed Tremé and stuff like that. So, but I like him. I think this is his best movie in a long time. So I think it's really good, and I think if you're a fan of John Hamm, you should definitely see this if you like him as an actor, because he really carries the movie. It's good, it's solid, and like you said, Eric, it's a good solid movie for adults.
Agreed.
So, yeah, and it's playing everywhere, and that's called Beirut. And did it even make any money over the weekend?
Not really. I mean, it's only in like 750 screens.
Yeah.
So it's kind of everywhere. No, I didn't crack the top 10 this weekend.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later on when we get to the box office. Boy, I'll tell you what, though, when we get to the box office, that Quiet Place, man.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, everybody hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Eric, hold on. There's Eric is going to hang on. Colin is going to hang on. When we come back, we got more new movies to review, and we will talk about that box office as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And it's Monday morning, and we'll come back with more movie reviews right after this on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Welcome back. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Monday morning movie reviews. That's what we're doing right now. We'll do the box office as well with Eric. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every week on Monday to review all the weekend's movies. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, tell us about Lean on Pete.
All right. Well, this stars Charlie Plummer, who you may have seen last year in All the Money in the World. And here he's a teenager growing up in, by the way, no relation to Christopher Plummer.
Right.
I always got to say that. And he plays a teenager growing up in rural Oregon with his father, who takes odd jobs around the Pacific Northwest. And he never really knew his mother, but she's out there somewhere. And Charlie, because his main character is also named Charlie, him and his father have a hard time staying in one place for too long. And all Charlie wants is a steady job and a high school that he can attend for more than one semester. And he eventually gets a job working for the owner of a horse named Lean on Pete, who competes in horse races, but he might not be in the best shape for that much longer. Nevertheless, Charlie forms a bond with this horse and ends up taking his life in unexpected directions. And I almost don't want to say too much about the rest of the story because the trailer is equally careful about not saying too much about what happens in this film. And I really think that's the best way to go into it. I will say the other actors in it include Chloe Sevigny, Amy Simetz, Steve Zahn, and Steve Buscemi, who's the owner of the horse that hires Charlie to do these little odd jobs for him. And he's one of the best things about this film. And this is a movie directed by Andrew Haig, who made a movie a few years ago called 45 Years. And that was on my top 10 list. And it wouldn't surprise me if at the end of the year, this was on my top 10 list. I'm leaving out a lot of story elements because I went into this movie not really knowing much about it, but the poster gave me the impression it was going to be another kind of movie completely. I thought this looked like a kind of a formulaic boy and his horse story that where you kind of can telegraph it from the beginning to the end. But the movie is anchored by a real breakthrough performance here by Charlie Plummer, who didn't make much of an impression on me in All the Money in the World. I thought he was good, but this is a movie that is, you know, I think could propel him to stardom if enough people see it. He is immediately a very sympathetic character, and you root for him in this movie because he's very agreeable. He's very, respects his elders. He has a strong work ethic and really has a clear focus on what he wants in his life. And they're very simple things, but they're very necessary things, for survival in life. And especially for a teenager, there's this very basic wants and needs that are very human. And, there's a lot. He's very soft-spoken and very, very, very focused, but his emotions are, every emotion in this film is based in truth. There's not a false note in the entire film. And it never takes the obvious approach to any dramatic scene. There are so many scenes in this movie where I thought, okay, I know it's going to happen here. And it doesn't, because the characters are so richly drawn and so beautifully presented and acted. And the movie just is not at all what I expected it to be. It's not at all predictable. And it's really refreshing to see that, to see a movie that just is going to take you in different directions than you expected. It's a really beautiful film. It's a remarkable journey to go on with this character. And I highly, highly recommend everybody go see it.
Okay. It's playing at the Century in Evanston and at the Landmark Century Center Cinema in Chicago on Clark. And that's Lean on Pete. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't get a chance to see this, so you guys are going to have to handle it. I didn't get out to see it. Eric, tell us about You Were Never Really Here.
Okay. This is the latest film from Lynn Ramsey, who gave us We Need to Talk About Kevin some years ago. And this movie stars Joaquin Phoenix as Joe, who seems to be some sort of professional assassin, although someone whose own mindset may be, kind of creeping up on him as well. He has a number of suicidal tendencies, and he does focus on two very specific things. One, his mother, whom he lives with, who is suffering through stages of dementia, and the jobs that he is put into. And his latest one involves sex trafficking of young girls. A politician, his daughter has been taken, possibly sold into the slave trade, and his job is to find her, and ruthlessly punish anyone who may be involved in the situation. As far as plotting is concerned, that's really all you need to know about this movie, because this is a movie that takes a extremely fractured narrative in the kinds of ways that some of the best movies about fractured narratives tend to do. I saw this movie at 8:30 in the morning on one of the last days at Sundance this year, and if ever a movie is there to just wake you up, this absolutely did it. Now, by the end of it, I think I had remarked when I talked about it at Sundance that I wasn't quite sure what I had seen at the time, if I had seen something that was more Drive or more Only God Forgives. I think to crouch it even in this sort of the vagueness of or the simplicity of just comparing it to something like Drive because of the brutality in this film, I think it kind of does the movie a disservice. Because the more I've thought about this movie, the more I appreciated the approach that Ramsey brings to the film. And there's also not denying just how good Joaquin Phoenix is in this role. I mean, this guy is a brute that you want on your side, but a brute nevertheless. This is a guy, you know, as an assassin, he's not, isn't really fond of using a gun. He likes to use a hammer. So you can imagine the kind of scenes that that leads to throughout the movie. This is a guy with the flashes of a really horrific childhood that seemingly has formed this madness that is inside him. And it's certainly one of the best performances I've seen this year so far. And a film that, like I said, I've been thinking about it for several months now, and it's a movie that I can't wait to see again and again, just to sort of unravel the way it tells its story, and bring a further appreciation to not just the performance, but the way Ramsey tells the story. It's certainly not for everyone. I mean, if you're squeamish in any way, and you like your stories a little more straightforward, this is not really your type of movie. But for many of us who enjoy films that challenge you, don't depend a lot on dialogue, but yet brings out very primal emotions during the viewing experience, this is a pretty great film.
Okay. We'll take a break, Colin, and then you'll tell us what you think, okay?
Okay,
hang on a second. That's Eric and Colin, and we're going to take a break. All right, we'll be right back with the news. All right, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. And we're doing the Monday morning movie reviews. We'll also talk about the box office. That's all coming up. We are also going to be talking about great comedy teams. That'll be coming up as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, we're in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews before the break and the news. Eric told us about Joaquin Phoenix's new movie, You Were Never Really Here. And Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Now let's hear what Colin thinks of this film. Go ahead, Colin.
Yeah, this is a really difficult film to watch, but a really rewarding one if you decide to take the chance. You know, on the surface, we've seen this before. I think we've seen Joaquin Phoenix do bearded and brooding before. And I think we've seen, this kind of character rescuing young girls before. You know, so like on the surface level, it's really nothing new. But what the approach to it, Lynn Ramsey directed the film, who made Morvern Kallar and We Need to Talk About Kevin, which is a movie that I've gone back and watched again and reevaluated, and I like it a lot more now. Takes an approach to character study that might be frustrating for some people who are looking for a very straightforward narrative, but we are really in this character's head. I mean, this movie is full of flashbacks and flash forwards. It's very hallucinatory. And so Ramsey does a really good job of placing us in the psychology of what this character goes through on a day-to-day basis, and never comes up with any real easy answers or conclusion that, you know, would be satisfactory in a kind of phony narrative way. And Joaquin Phoenix is certainly up to the task for that sort of thing, and he is still amazing to watch in this movie. You know, Eric compared it to somewhere between Drive and Only God Forgives, both Nicholas Winding Refn films. To describe it to people, I would lean more closer to movies like Taxi Driver and Bad Lieutenant, and they kind of is in terms of like tone and, you know, like Eric also mentioned some of the brutality in the movie and some of the stuff in it that's a little hard to watch. Yeah, but this is a really intense and really fascinating character study, one that is worth multiple viewings. So, yeah, I recommend it, too.
Okay. All right, I'll have to get to it. I didn't get a chance to see it over there. It sounds like the feel-good movie of the year.
Oh, yeah. Bring the kids. Bring the kids. After you go see Sergeant Subby, go see this.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about Rampage?
Okay. Rampage began as a video game from the 1980s. Nick, do you ever play Rampage?
I think I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in the game, basically you took on the role of giant monsters. They were actually humans that transformed into monsters, and then just your job was to wreck buildings and eat humans from the windows and for bonus points and things like that. It was really a lot of fun. In this movie, we have humans as the good guys, basically. Dwayne Johnson plays a zoologist, an ex-Special Forces zoologist, who works at the San Diego Preserve, Gorilla Preserve, and is friends with a giant albino ape named George. And who can sign, and they have a really special relationship. Outside of our world, an experiment has been taking place, and an expansion of an experiment to help humans who have one of those godlike cures, to try to increase stability, cure cancer, all these kind of things. Well, it was deemed, not a good thing, and it was put in stasis, and now it's being tested again on a space station at the beginning of the movie. And, a giant rat gets loose, taking this formula, and the remaining bits of the formula are scattered throughout the United States and ingested by three particular animals, a crocodile, a wolf, and poor George, and each of them begin growing at an exponential rate and then are basically summoned to Chicago through a giant sonar on top of the formerly Sears Tower. By the people in charge of the experimentation, the large corporation run by Malin Ackerman,
mm-hmm.
and her brother, played by Jake Lacy, in a really odd performance.
Absolutely.
Really odd performance. So Dwayne Johnson wants to save his buddy, who is now becoming incredibly aggressive. And it's basically just a waiting game for them to get to Chicago and just start tearing the hell out of the city. Naomi Harris plays a scientist who worked on the formula back before she was fired by the company. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who is completely playing Negan from The Walking Dead in the movie.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
he's
a nice Negan.
He doesn't have a bat.
He doesn't have a bat, right. but he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He starts off as kind of a jerk, but then you realize he's actually a guy with a soft spot. But he's totally doing every manifestation of Negan from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Which, is a bit distracting, frankly. All we're trying to do is get to Chicago and watch these giant creatures tear the hell out of everything. So you have, what is essentially a super, super, super dumb movie with a lot of really good special effects and an opportunity to see Chicago destroyed once again. One of the main differences between this and, say, the third Transformers movies where Chicago got destroyed is that at least the director, Brad Peyton, has the common courtesy to move the camera back a little bit so you actually get to witness some of the destruction from various vantage points and actually kind of see what's going on, including one really pretty spectacular moment of destruction dirt during this climax. But it is a super, super, super dumb movie, and it takes quite a while to get to that Chicago sequence. There's not a lot of intermediary set pieces. There's a big moment on a plane and all that, and there's a lot of talking. There's the villains aren't particularly interesting, and you just want to get to Chicago, and some of that stuff is fun. But I, at the same time, I kind of had the same reaction to the film that I did with the last Brad Peyton, Dwayne Johnson destruction movie, which was San Andreas, that I thought that, special effects were good. It wasn't unwatchable by any stretch, but the director just didn't have that. He doesn't have that kind of that extra oomph to the action sequences. He's not particularly good at crafting set pieces. He's very good at handling the special effects, very good at making it realistic enough that you actually believe this stuff is happening. But there's just something missing from the sequence on the plane and all the stuff that's going on in Chicago that really just kind of gets me excited. Yeah, it's kind of fun to watch some of that stuff blow up and, to hear the Army colonel say things like, "We don't have subs in this area," when there's a giant alligator coming in from the Chicago River, as if they're conducting military exercises in the Chicago River. Amazing. I watched it. I wasn't disengaged from the movie, and there were times in the movie where I thought I was going to recommend it. I wish there was actually more stuff between Johnson and the gorilla. Or the ape, because I really like George in the movie. I think George gives the best performance in the movie, frankly. It's dumb. I wouldn't tell people not to see it, but I can't give it a full-throated recommendation.
Okay. All right. Hang on, Eric. Colin, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll find out what I thought of Rampage. Colin did not see it, so I'll tell you what I thought of Rampage. And then we've got one more movie to review, a horror film called Truth or Dare. That'll be coming up, too. And then the box office. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Monday morning movie reviews are happening right now. My dad's going to call in because it's Monday, and he'll tell a joke. And we're going to talk about comedy themes as well. Before the break, Eric told us about the big action spectacular Rampage. He said, whatever.
Too much by review.
Yeah. Eric, welcome back. Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. This is a really dumb movie. But I have to say there were things in it that I really liked. And you forgot to mention the ridiculous subplot with Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, well, it was so, like, you think that that's going to be a bigger part of the movie.
I know.
And it's just kind of like, wait, why did, it almost felt like a reshoot.
It was so weird. I thought, okay, this guy's going to be in it, because they set his character up. They set his character up big time. And he's got all these scars on him, and he's mm-hmm. he's a total badass. And then, he's in the movie for 10 minutes. And,
right.
And I was like, wait a minute, that's it? And there was, really no connection to the rest of the movie, and it just seems so weird. It's like you got these badasses on this helicopter, trying to hunt down this giant wolf, and then...
It's like, what if Predator was only 10 minutes long?
Yeah, that was kind of... So that was weird. There's a lot of weird stuff in this movie. You mentioned Jake Lacy, and I think Malin Ackerman are both weird in it, and way over the top. And I don't know what was Jake Lacy's idea of constantly having something in his hand to eat,
with a cover on it too.
Yeah,
so he didn't burn his hand.
He had a Pop Tart in a I was like,
right.
What are you
in
do-
a koozie?
Are you doing the Brad Pitt Oceans acting? What's going on here?
So
I thought that was weird. The Rock's the Rock, he's fine,
mm-hmm.
Naomi Harris is charming, and that's fine. And obviously you just especially seeing the movie in Chicago, living here, I saw it in IMAX, which is if you're gonna see it on the biggest, sure, loudest screen you possibly can. So I saw it in IMAX. I have to say, I thought the last 20 minutes was pretty great, watching them just completely demolish this city. And, obviously, they show it in the trailer. I'm not going to say what the big takedown is. But that
I didn't know that was in the trailer.
It's in the trailer. It showed on the commercial. I was watching TV, and I was like, don't show that.
Yeah, right.
Especially in this city. You can show it outside of Chicago, but anyway, so that part I thought was fantastic, and you're right. I think a lot of the stuff, you really get to see the city get destroyed. There's a lot of tanks are getting thrown around. People with But now, here's the thing though that I love about it. They're like, we have to completely evacuate Chicago,
right?
And every time they said that line, they say it four times in the movie. Everybody in the theater laughed.
Yeah.
We're going to completely evacuate Chicago. Like, what?
Yeah, you had to, get people, evacuating. No, I'm not going anywhere. Chicago, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and so...
But they do have, the one, because, these movies get a lot of scrutiny now. Obviously, the 9/11 imagery or whatever.
Yeah.
But, Batman versus Superman, even, or Man of Steel, for that matter.
Yeah.
But they, the one shot after, the city's, downtown's completely destroyed.
Yeah.
And then they pull out like 10 extras to right. play like the guys that are like, oh, my head hurts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they're helping them at the end.
Right. You know, it's, and it's like, oh, see, there was actually carnage.
I love the idea that you know, because at one point, they're like at the very end of the movie, I'm not giving anything away. At the very end of the movie, it's like, we saved the city. No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
You didn't save the city. The city has been destroyed.
There's a lot of work that's going to have to be done for several months and years.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I have to say, I had a good time, especially during the last 20 minutes. And I too like I too like George. I thought the stuff between George and The Rock was pretty funny. And
yes.
You know, so, and the special effects are good. It's just, it is what it is, man. I mean, this is right. like, if you want to see something big, loud, and goofy, if you want to see Chicago get destroyed, see it.
Yeah, exactly, can't disagree.
That's it. All right, Colin, tell us about Truth or Dare.
All right, well, this is the latest horror offering from Blumhouse, and depending on where you look, the movie's title is Blumhouse's Truth or Dare.
Right.
I refuse to call it that because I think that's silly, but this is the studio that brought us Split and Get Out last year, two big hits. And this one follows a group of generic college students who travel to Mexico for spring break, and one of them, a girl named Olivia, played by Lucy Hale, meets up with a guy named Carter, who seems charming enough. He invites her and her friends to a remote abandoned castle, I think it was, where he lures them into a seemingly innocent game of truth or dare. And eventually they learn that it's not so innocent, that they are actually stuck in this game for life. And there are life or death rules here. And if you don't follow through on the dare, you die. And the players of the game have to follow the pattern they first established when they first played the game of who picks truth or dare and when. And they learn that they don't really have control over the game. There's a kind of demon possession element that takes over when they least expect it. And they hallucinate people with, like, Joker-like smiles, telling them that they have to now pick truth or dare. So this is a movie that, you know, even when you describe the plot, there's a germ of a good idea here, but just felt like there were too many cooks in the kitchen, and it certainly feels like it that a movie that was written by four screenwriters, and in fact it has been, many of which are based in reality TV. I think they're like, some of them are from Big Brother, who wrote this film. And you know, you get the sense that it's a movie written just for the idea, not so much for the characters, although a lot of the horror of the piece comes from, you know, it's like a teen soap opera with a body count, because the truths that come out are harsh truths that these characters have to confess to one another that are not easy to deal with. Unfortunately, the characters just aren't that interesting to merit that kind of weighty idea. And the scares aren't really scares. They're kind of generic jump scares. There is one cool set piece that I really liked involving a girl who has to walk on the roof of a building. I thought that was well done. I enjoyed that. But other than that, I mean, this is kind of, you know, not really worthy of having Blumhouse's name, you know, solely attached to it if you're looking for, like, the next Get Out. It's certainly not that. It's nowhere near that intelligently written or well crafted. You know, it's a pretty dumb movie. I've seen dumber of this genre. A lot of people are comparing it to Final Destination, having that sort of supernatural evil character following these characters around, and you're never knowing when it's going to strike. You know, I enjoyed many of the Final Destination movies. I think I enjoyed those more because I'm just kind of waiting for the next clever set piece. And there's no really major clever set pieces here except for the one that I mentioned, unless I'm forgetting another one. But so, no, I can't recommend this, especially when there's a really great horror movie out there already, and, you know, that we talked about last week that you'll talk about during the box office.
Yeah.
This obviously is the inferior choice between the two. And so, yeah, I can't really recommend this.
Okay. All right. Kyle and Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought, and Eric will tell you what he thought of Truth or Dare, and then we'll do the box office. All coming up right here on 720 WGN. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio, seventh floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. Box office is coming up. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and we're in the middle of the movie reviews. Before the news and before the break, Colin told us all about the new horror movie Truth or Dare, and he is not recommending it. Eric, welcome back. And
hello.
Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, Eric, what did you think, Truth or Dare?
I think this may be the worst film I've seen this year so far. This is a film that the longer it went on, it crossed more lines with me. Starting with the very beginning, the setup of the movie is just struck me as just like, wow, so someone watched It Follows and decided to write a movie. Because, I mean, they actually have a line
of dialogue. Exactly, you know, dude, that's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This Carter character has to pass along the Truth or Dare thing so he can survive, and he actually has the line, "It followed me here."
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, at least try to hide it a little bit. So there's that. I'm just like, okay, so you're just copying that for, you know, with a cheap production budget. And then, you know, the characters themselves, particularly a couple of them, are like aggressively horrible people. Like, aggressively horrible. One, you know, is just, you know, this horny kid who is just, I mean, a jerk about it. And then there's another one who's basically a better-looking jerk about it, but he's got a girlfriend. So, like, you know, you don't even want to see these characters make it into the second act, let alone spend any time with them. They completely forget about one character for a long stretch of the movie, Hayden Zetto, who was in Edge of 17. Mm-hmm. He was like a stretch where I wrote down, I'm like, it's like 15 minutes. I'm like, did they skip a reel here? What happened to that guy? But he comes back and has a really horrific thing happen to him. But the longer this movie went on, and this movie tried to sort of, like Colin's talking about, the sort of the harsh truths that some of these characters have to discover, and these arc that particularly these two girlfriends have to go through the course of this movie, I really started to get bothered by how the Blumhouse brand is now using a lot of, like, really horrific real-life things as props in their movies. At South by Southwest, I saw the Unfriended sequel, Dark Web, and there's a goofy quality kill in the movie that involves swatting. And in this movie, you know, there are setups and backstories involving pedophiles and child rape and suicide and then there's police shooting stuff had no interest in any kind of commentary in regards to this stuff. It just used them for cheap thrill tactics. By the end of the movie, which then completely rips off The Ring, of all things, it's just a smarter person could have crafted a really fascinating horror movie out of this, you know, this cheap derivative, you know, garbage. But the people involved with this movie had no interest in doing that. They had a cheap budget and they made a cheap film with horrible people and no scares whatsoever. I was really bothered by this film by the time it was ended.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was crap. The thing is, and I agree with you about the exploitation element of it here, but I, you know, like the whole It Follows thing, and then like you mentioned, Colin, then it turns into Final Destination 8. You know what I mean? That's essentially, you know, it reminded me a lot of the Final Destination movies. And by the way, for the record, I like to bust out Final Destination 2 and just watch the first 10 minutes.
Yeah,
every couple of months. This whole Blumhouse, now being a studio that possesses the name, you know, it's like Disney's this, mm-hmm. Now it's Blumhouse's Truth or Dare. I find so ridiculous. And you know, it's not every. You can't just like put every movie that they've produced in the same like umbrella, because you know they've produced crap as well as good stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like to say, hey, from the producers of Get Out, that's really misleading. Because that's Jordan Peele It's not Blumhouse. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just, it's really just, this is as generic and bad and borderline offensive as you can get. The characters are unlikable and they're all interchangeable. I happen to like Lucy Hale because I was a Pretty Little Liars fan. So I happen to like her, and I wish her, you know, better in the future, because I think she's got some talent and she's very likable. But this is not it. And you could tell this thing went through a ton of rewrites, and it's very half-assed in every capacity. Like, you know, whatever plot point they bring in, they just go half-assed on it. It's like, okay, let's just get to some sort of weird payoff, and we'll combine this element with that element. It's just a mess. It's an absolute mess. And it only cost $3 million, so it made money.
That's right.
So, and that's why they keep, you know, they just keep churning these things out, man. That's what Blumhouse is doing. Every once in a while, a great one will come out under the umbrella of Blumhouse. But for the most part, a lot of the stuff that they're doing now is just, you know, $3 million cheap horror movies that'll make their money back on the weekend, and especially on DVD. So
yeah, they're responsible for the Purge movies too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
you know,
it's true.
Cash cows.
Yep. All right. Next week we have I Feel Pretty, which is the new Amy Schumer movie.
Yeah.
Super Troopers 2. I know we've all been waiting for that. the one that I'm most curious about is Kodachrome.
Well, I've seen that.
Yeah, so so that's some of the stuff coming out, and then of course the following week, of course, it is Infinity Wars. So we'll see.
All right,
Colin, thanks, man.
Alrighty.
All right, and Eric, why don't we talk a little bit? Colin, we'll talk to you next week. All right, Eric, let's talk box office.
Great.
The number one movie is Rampage with 34.5 million, but that's really not the big story.
Not really. No, I mean the positive story about Rampage is the fact that it actually kind of rallied this weekend to take the number one slot. When the numbers came out between Friday and Saturday, it looked like our number two movie was going to win, but Rampage kind of rallied, and so people are just like, it shushed A Quiet Place. No,
it didn't.
Not really.
No,
and it's not a great number for Rampage. I think it might have the benefit, with the exception of Infinity War coming out, that a very kind of limited marketplace in the next 4 weeks, that it might be able to stretch itself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, made like another $118 million overseas, the $120 million production. So it might eventually turn a profit, but it's not exactly the kind of start that they were hoping for, in America, particularly if they just barely beat, you know, the movie from last week.
Right. And that movie is A Quiet Place, which made $32.6 million.
Yeah, one of the best drops of the year. The only drops that have been better were family films like Paddington 2 and Peter Rabbit and Sherlock Gnomes. So, I mean, a 35% drop for this in the second week is pretty remarkable given, the $50 million start last week. I mean, clearly this is a word of mouth deal. Krasinski's been out there, hitting the talk show circuits.
Yep.
So, I mean, this thing's being talked up. I mean, there's a very real possibility that this could end up crossing $200 million in the U.S.
Well, it's almost at $100 million now.
Yeah, it'll be passing $100 million today, and I don't think I Feel Pretty and Super Troopers 2 are not going to take a lot of business away from it. So I think it's going to have a very healthy third weekend as well. But, you know, you're probably looking right now at the very least somewhere between $185 and $195 million for this.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And its per screen average was the biggest. Per screen average was bigger than Rampage.
Yeah.
Even though Rampage was number one.
Yep.
And it only cost, what, $17
million? $17
million. Jeez.
Yeah, this is right now is going to be the biggest success for Paramount since the last Mission Impossible film.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Number three is the Blumhouse's Truth or Dare.
Yeah.
Which made $19 million, which, I mean, it only cost three.
Only cost three. I mean, even if you add in, you know, the extra cost for advertising or whatnot, it was probably maybe about another $15-20 million. This is going to end up turning a profit. I mean, the last four horror movies that they released, including Split and Get Out, all grossed over $20 million on their opening weekend. So it just came short of that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably drop off pretty quickly. It's probably going to end up in the low 40s when all is said and done. But, who cares?
Yeah, it's
$3.5 million budget.
Yeah, absolutely. Number four, Ready Player One with $11.2 million. That's up to $114 million.
Yeah, nearly at $500 million worldwide. So this thing, it looks like it is going to be a success after all. You know, just calm down. You know, I mean, it's starting to lose its audience a bit. Rampage ate into that this weekend, and you know, Infinity War obviously will in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So this thing's probably going to, you know, top out somewhere around 135, 140 million in the U.S. So, I mean, you know, for Spielberg, that doesn't seem like a lot, but, you know, $500 million, you know, you could do a lot worse than that.
Yeah. I just think it's amazing that A Quiet Place is going to make more money.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true.
That's unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
Number five, Blockers, which made $10.2 million. That dropped, what, about 50% almost?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, there was like $21 million last week. So, yeah, it did drop a little more than 50%. Not the drop that they were hoping for. You know, I feel pretty is going to eat into that a little bit this week. So this thing's probably looking somewhere between $50 and $60 million, which I thought it could actually do more than that. But I guess the word of mouth hasn't quite picked up for it. People are seeing A Quiet Place.
Yeah. Number six, boy, oh boy, Black Panther. It's going to be in the top 10 when Infinity War comes out.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
No, I mean, I feel, you know, what, two movies, you know, assuming Super Troopers makes it in the top 10 next week. It should.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's cool. So, what, Black Panther will be eighth, maybe seventh next week, maybe. And then, yeah, so it'll be in the top 10 when Infinity War comes out.
Yeah. Okay, so it's up to $673 million just in America.
Yeah, $1.3 billion worldwide.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven, Isle of Dogs, which went up this week. Did they give it a lot more theaters now?
They increased the screen count of it, yeah. So it was up to like 14, almost 15 million now?
18.
18 million, okay. Yeah, so I mean, it's going to, you know, best Fantastic Mr. Fox. You know, dollars. Not going to get anywhere near Grand Budapest. I don't know if they're going to, how much more they're going to expand this thing. They might as well. I mean, they got all of April to play with it, so yeah. They might as well, you know, try to do something with it. But it's not as, you know, it's not doing great.
Right. Number eight is I Can Only Imagine. Again, the biggest roadside attraction. What is it? Roadside attraction?
Roadside attractions. Yeah.
It's their biggest hit.
It's going to double what Manchester by the Sea did, possibly.
Wow. $3.8 million this week, and it's up to, up to almost $75
million. $75
million. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Number nine, Tyler Perry's Acrimony, 3.7.
Yeah.
That's $37.8
million. Yeah.
I mean, that's going to, you know, it doesn't matter at this point. He shot it in 8 days.
Exactly.
So, and then number 10, Chappaquiddick.
Yeah, managed to hang on for one more week. But again, you know, there's like they're in for like $20 million, Byron Allen's company. So $11 million is not really going to cut it.
Yeah. Now, do we see, what do we see for next week? I mean, could A Quiet Place sneak up and be number one?
I think it's that's very possible. That's very possible. I'm curious to see how the Schumer film does, if that storyline is going to be, you know, connect with women in a way that might make it a lot more successful than Snatched was last year. I don't want to bet on that, but I would not be surprised if Rampage drops enough. And I mean, you could have like a really close battle for first between Quiet Place, Rampage, and I Feel Pretty. Mm-hmm. I think they could all be kind of in like the low 20s next week.
Okay,
it'll be quite a battle.
And Super Troopers, I mean, it'll be in the top 10, but I mean, that's a pretty exclusive audience.
Yeah, and I mean, Fox Searchlight is releasing it. They released the first one. I mean, Broken Lizard, you know, they certainly have their fans, but they've never had a film that's cracked 20 million total.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we couldn't figure out how this movie, of all movies, did not end up playing at South by Southwest this year.
Yeah, how is that? Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. We kept waiting for it to be announced that it was going to, you know, show up on, you know, a week before we left, and it just never did. And I don't know if that means that they just avoided everything entirely. You know, maybe that's a sign thinking that it's not very good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see.
They played the Slam and Salmon at South by Southwest, for God's sake.
Yeah. Okay.
So, come on.
All right. Okay. Well, Eric, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.
And thanks a lot, buddy.
Sure thing.
Take care. There's Eric Childress. You can talk. We'll talk to him again next week with Colin and review the new movies and talk box office as we do every Monday morning. All right, we're going to take a break here. We got weather and we got traffic, and I got the weather for you right now.